just mentioned to me that a woman is having emergency surgery today, and we should perhaps dedicate our learning to a refuah for this woman, whose name is Basia Esther Bashendel Chana. Last week and 2 weeks ago, we mentioned the Medrash that says, Kol Masha Talmud Vosik Osir Lachadish Nemalala Moshe Misinai, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu everything that all of the Talmidim, all of the intelligent Talmidim, are going to be Mechadesh in all the future generations. So someone wanted to know exactly where that Medrash is. So I'm using over here, I mentioned the Netziv has a commentary on the Shiltas. The Netziv was a brother on the Aruch HaShulchan. And we gave a long discussion about him. The father of Chaim Berlin, father of Amer Bar Ilan. So he in this long commentary on the Shiltas, he has three introductions, one to the first volume, one to the second volume, one to the third volume. And now they're all printed together. Just a few years ago, about 5-10 years ago, somebody in Eretz Yisrael put all of these introductions together with a whole bunch of drushes of the Netziv in this small volume. And he has footnotes on the bottom. So if you want to look this up, this is in the Kidmas HaEimek. That's what it's called, the Hakadomah to the Haimek Dover, Haimek Sholeh rather, in the first introduction, chapter 3, and he quotes this medrash from Koheles Rabbah Perek Aleph is one source, the Yerushalmi and Peya Perek Sheni is another source, and then in the footnotes he quotes several other midrashim, Bayikra Rabbah Perek Chavbeis, and Koheles Rabbah Perek Hei, and Shmos Rabbah Perek Mem Zayin, and another Yerushalmi. He quotes quite a few sources where this medrash appears. Okay, let's get back to our topic. Last week we left off on the commenting on the Din of Shulchan Aruch that even though later generations have a right to disagree with earlier generations, the Ramah writes that a scholar in his generation has a right to disagree with the Gaonim who preceded Rashi and Tosfos, and we spoke about the fact that Amoraim had the right to disagree with Tanoim and so on. Nonetheless, those who live after the Chasimus HaTalmud, as we refer to it, the completion of the Talmud Bavli, Ravin Ravashi, have no right to disagree with those who preceded. That's what the Gemara uses, the expression Ravin Ravashi, Sof Horo. That's the end of the period of the Horo, and we explained why that was so. We said over from Ramosha Salavashi to Pshat in the Gemara that until the days of Ravin Ravashi, the Torah Shavalpeh was still being transmitted Balpeh. And it was only at that time, even though Rabbi Yudah Nasi had edited the Mishnayos, and it was still being recited Balpeh. Until the days of Ravi Ravashi, that's when they started teaching the classes Mitoch HaKsav. So since from that time on, the Torah Shavalpeh was being taught Mitoch HaKsav, so the status of Chachmei HaMasorah was much lower. All the Talmidei Chachamim from that time on are on a lower level of Balei HaMasorah, and therefore they have no right to disagree with those who preceded them. So I mentioned last week that in the introduction to the Sefer, Dor Revi, I mentioned this author, was a great-grandson of the Chasam Sefer, and he has a Sefer, a running commentary on Maseches Chulin. In the introduction, he speaks about the development of the Torah Shemalpeh, has a lot to say about that. He was a Rav in Kloisenberg. So he has a very interesting comment about this. He uses very sharp expressions, very modern, pretty modern. He lived just recently. He died in this century. So he raises the question, he uses the sharp expression, why did the Chachamim in the days of Ravin Ravashi, why did they write down the Torah Shebaal Peh and tie everybody's hands? That's the expression that he uses. Madua Kashri Yideihem, why did they tie the hands of the later Talmidei Chachamim that they can no longer develop the Torah Shebaal Peh? Was that right of them? In every generation, the Torah Shebaal Peh was being developed and developed differently, and people were disagreeing with all those who preceded them. So why did they decide in that time to write down the Torah Shebaal Peh? So it's usually assumed that the answer to the question is because they were afraid that there was going to be a tremendous galus and all the redifas and all the pogroms, and the whole Torah Shebaal Peh would be forgotten if they would still be teaching the Torah Shebaal Peh, Baal Peh, and you wouldn't be teaching it from a text. So they were afraid the whole Torah Shebaal Peh would be forgotten. That's why it's usually assumed. That's the simple reading of the Gemara. The Gemara in the beginning of the second parak in Temurah speaks about the heter to write down the Torah Shebaal Peh, that it wasn't really right, that there was a special heter. And the Rambam quotes it, and that's the simple reading of what it seems to say in the Gemara. So he suggests something different. And this suggestion, he was very consumed with this idea. the importance of the Jewish people living in Eretz Yisrael. He felt that Torah can only be properly developed 1 year in Eretz Yisrael. And even though he was a great-grandson of the Hassam Sefer, who was a big Zionist, at a time that all the religious Rabbonim were opposed to Zionism, because the Zionists were all anti-religious, and that's why they were makpid about him a little bit. They were upset about him, but he was such a big Talmid Chacham, so what could they be upset? So they had to respect him. So he thinks that the real reason why did they tie everybody's hands, because they were afraid that as the Jews would go into Golus and they would be exposed to foreign cultures. In every generation, there's so much input of the Rabbanim. So if the Rabbanim are going to be exposed to all these foreign cultures, so they're going to have this secular agenda. They're going to be putting into the Torah things that don't belong. And this was the reason why the Chachamim tied the hands of the later generations. They were afraid that the Rabbanim and the later generations would be putting new things in. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to speak a lot about that. In the writings of Rabbi Soloveitchik, you have about the Masorah, the transmission of the Torah from generation to generation, is not just the transmission of the Halachas, but the transmission of attitudes. And he speaks about the Rebbe-Talmud relationship. He himself had a very difficult, he didn't have such a gewaldige relationship with his students personally. He wasn't so warm with his students, but he speaks about, theoretically, that the warm relationship that there should exist between the Rebbe and the Talmidim. And the Rebbe is supposed to succeed in transmitting his personality to the students. The Talmud has to pick up a chunk of the Rebbe's personality, because the attitudes have to be transmitted as well. And in fact, the Gemara has such an expression. The Gemara has special dealing with respect to Am Ha'aretz. There was an institution of Am Ha'aretz. What exactly is an Am Ha'aretz? So today, we use the term very differently from the days of the Talmud. Today means a person who's an ignoramus, who does know how to learn Torah. But in the days of the Talmud, it didn't necessarily mean that. It meant a person who was not so observant, or the Gemara even has one opinion, the concluding opinion after a whole series of opinions in a brisa towards the end of Brachos, is Afilu Kara Vishana. Even a person who studied Mikra, Mikra means Tanakh, Kara Vishana, he studied Mishnah. Even a person who knows all of Tanakh, he knows all of Mishnah, Velo Shimish Talmid HaChamim, but he didn't study at the feet of Talmid HaChamim, is also considered Am Ha'aretz. What kind of an expression is that? Kara Vishana. Halavai, we would have people today who know all of Tanakh and know all of Mishnahs. There aren't so many people rolling around in the streets. The Gemara has this expression, even Kara Vishana, he knows all of Mikra, all of Tanakh, he knows all of Mishnahs. But because he learned it and he knows it, it seems he even knows it, but Loshimish Talmid HaChacham, he wasn't Mishamesh Talmid HaChacham, means he didn't pick up the attitudes from the Talmid HaChacham. So the Gemara says such a person has the special status of Am Ha'aretz. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to use that expression from that Gemara with respect to some of the younger rabbis of our generation who were doing things that he was very opposed to. So he said, this one is an Am Ha'aretz. They would ask him, what about this one? He's an Am Ha'aretz. So he said, what do you mean he's an Am Ha'aretz? But he gives shiurim in a shul. He says, he's still an Am Ha'aretz. A person who only picks up the halachas from the Talmud, from his rabbeim, and doesn't pick up the attitudes, he said is considered an Am Ha'aretz. That's what it says in the Gemara. There was a very interesting essay published just in the last issue of Tradition by Rabbi Meir Twersky. He doesn't write about this. He writes about the tradition being transmitted from generation to generation. There's a tradition of halachas as well as a tradition of attitudes. this concern for people, for the Rabbanim, for the Talmid Chachamim in every generation, introducing sort of secular attitudes, having their own agenda to introduce new concepts into the Torah, is already discussed in the Talmud. In the Gemara, there is a dispute whether Mashkinus Hagioris, there's a din of Soto, if a man thinks that his wife is not faithful, so he brings it to the Beis Hamikdash, if he's so paranoid, if he's so consumed with concern that he thinks his wife was Mezana, so he brings it to the Beis Hamikdash and she drinks the Maim Hamorim. So the Pasuk introduces that parsha, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people. So sometimes the Tanoim understand that phrase, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, to mean to the exclusion of Gerim. That even though a Ger, even though a non-Jew converts, and he's also Jewish, and he has to keep Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras HaMishpach and everything else, but there are several dinim in the Torah where we say the phrase Bnei Yisrael means Bnei Yisrael Lemayit Es HaGerim, that the Gerim are not included in his din. Usually it says Daber al Bnei Yisrael, the Gerim are included. And once in a while, we say the Gerim are not included. It's hard to tell. How did the rabbis know? How did the Tanoim know which phrases The exact same phrase. When this phrase appears, B'nai Yisrael, when does it come to exclude the Gerim? When does it not come to exclude it? So in the Parsha. Pardon me? Sometimes also B'nai Yisrael is to exclude B'nai Yisrael. Usually it's not. Usually it's not to the exclusion of B'nai Yisrael. It's also a problem. How did the Tanoim know when B'nai has the connotation of men and not women? And when it just means the Jewish people. That's a major problem. How do they know to Lamait Gerim? How do they know when the same phrase is Lamait Noshim? That's a good question. We don't know. So the Talmud has a dispute regarding Maim Hamorim. Does the Parsha Sota apply if the husband is a Ger? Because it says Dabrel B'nai Yisrael. Maybe B'nai Yisrael comes to the exclusion of a Ger. So the Talmud uses the expression, where the mashkim is hagioris. Can you give maim hamorim to a woman who's a gioris? It doesn't really depend on the status of the woman. Gioris means the wife of a ger. It doesn't really mean that she's a gioris. It means if the husband is a ger, does this din apply or not? So the first Tanoim say no, that they feel you should darshan the pasuk, B'nai Yisrael v'lo es hagerim, that this miracle, this nest of maim hamorim, the Torah promises a nest that's going to occur throughout all the generations. That if the woman is guilty, she's going to get sick, she's going to die. If she's innocent, then nothing will happen. Nothing should happen. My mom is just a little dirty water, has a little sand in it. There's nothing poisonous in it. So, b'derech hateva, the woman shouldn't get sick, she shouldn't die. But the Torah promises in us that in the event that she is guilty, she's going to die. If nothing happens, she doesn't get sick, she doesn't die, we assume that that's 100% conclusive evidence that she's innocent and nothing happened. So the first Tanoim were of the opinion that you cannot be mashkes hagioris, that the din only applies if the husband is a Yisrael, not if he's a ger. And then the Tana, then the Mishnah quotes the view of Shmai v'Avtalion, who themselves were descendants of gerim. The Rambam claims that they themselves were gerim, and most other commentaries say they themselves were not gerim, but they were descendants of gerim. One way or the other, they had to do with gerim. So they said, yes, mashkim is hagioris. You can administer the mayim hamorim to a woman whose husband is a ger. So there was one character around, Shmai Bavtalion, lived in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, towards the end of the period of the Second Temple. So at the time that they paskan like that, so there was one character, one balabas, who said, yeah, of course they're going to say like that. They themselves are gerim. They themselves are mimishpachas gerim. They were descendants from gerim. So of course they're going to champion the causes of the gerim. So the Mishnah records that they put that balabas in cherim. One who says that the Talmud Chacham paskans the shayla because of his personal negiyas deserves to be put into cherem. I remember every 7 years, when it would be the Sukkot following Shnas HaShemitah, the Yiddish newspaper used to come out every day, years ago. There used to be many more people who were interested in reading Yiddish. So they used to have every Matzoi Shemitah, every Sukkot following a Shemitah year. So they would have two advertisements placed in the Yiddish newspaper on the same page. One advertisement will be paid for by the Mizrahi. It says, paid for by the Mizrahi, and it says, Rabbi Soloveitchik said, Rabbi Yosef Ben Soloveitchik said that this year, as in every year, it's permissible and recommended to use an esrog from Eretz Yisrael, notwithstanding the fact that it grew during Shnas HaShemitah. There's no problem whatsoever. You should support the farmers in Eretz Yisrael who sell the esrog. On the same page would be an advertisement put in by other groups that the Satmar Rebbe Shlita, the one who passed away, the previous Satmar Rebbe, said that this year you're not allowed to buy an esrog from Eretz Yisrael because it grew in Shemitah, and that poses a problem. So many people would say, yeah, we could have said that with our eyes closed. If you would have asked me in my sleep, I would have given you. Of course, Rabbi Soloveitchik is for the Medina, so he says you should buy the Esregim. He's going to paskin in favor of the Esregim for Eretz Yisrael. And the Satmar Rebbe was against the Medina, so of course he's not going to support the farmers in Eretz Yisrael. So of course he's going to say that you're not allowed to buy an Esregim from Eretz Yisrael. Simona says like that. The Gemara says deserves to be put in cherem. Unless you're dealing with phonies, unless the Satmar Rebbe with Rabbi Soloveitchik were not honest Talmidei Chacham. But if they're honest Talmidei Chachamim, then we assume that their opinions, the opinions that they're expressing on a halachic issue, are unrelated to their political views. It happens that this shaila about the Esrog Yishmita has nothing to do with the politics. Has nothing at all to do with the politics. It's a halachic question. You can hold however you want to hold as far as the politics is concerned. It's totally unrelated. I remember, in fact, when I used to go to Bnei Akiva many years ago, they used to tell us, I remember it still stuck in my mind, the expression, the question is whether there's a legitimate heta mechira to sell Eretz Yisrael to the Arabs and thereby make it permissible to do avodas hakarka during the Shemitah year. If the land is sold to an Arab, are the Jewish farmers allowed to work during Shemitah? So the expression that one of the people told us in Bnei Akiva was, Misha ma'amin b'kdushat ha'aretz, whoever believes in the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, vadai yimtza heter, would certainly find a heter. So I thought it was a good line. I was a little boy, wasn't even bar mitzvah. I thought it was a very good line. And many years later, when I learned in yeshiva, I was surprised to find out that it's just the opposite. Misha ma'amin b'kdushat ha'aretz, one who believes that there's a real kedusha min ha'teret Eretz Yisrael, ain't heter. The whole heter is based, the whole heter mechir is based on the assumption that there's no kedushas haaretz min ha'teret, that it's only made rabbanan. But bisha really, misha ma'amin b'kdushat ha'aretz, as ein heter, the whole thing is wrong. So anyway, that's what the Gemara seems to say, that one who is choshed a Talmud Chacham, unless the fellow's not an honest Talmud Chacham, unless the fellow's just a politician. Like last night, we had a discussion group here in the neighborhood. So one of the people mentioned his father was a big Talmud Chacham, his father passed away, and he once attended a conference of rabbanim. And when he came home, he mentioned to this son that he was extremely aggravated, that all of the rabbanim who were there all expressed their opinions on a certain issue, each one according to his party line. So he said, that's terrible. No one really expressed a halachic opinion. Each one was just speaking politics. It wasn't shechina medaberes mitoch ronim, it was politics mitoch ronim. So that's if you have talmid hachamim who are not so outstanding, they're not honest talmid hachamim. But if you have honest talmid hachamim, then we assume that the opinions that they're expressing are not based on the agenda that they have, based on some secular attitudes of foreign cultures or something like that, some preconceived notions of what they think the world should look like. There is such a thing as a hashkafas ha-Torah. So a Talmid Chacham has to have a tradition, not only on halachas, he has to have a tradition on hashkafas ha-Torah, and be careful not to mix in any of his own personal likes and dislikes into when he wants to make input into the Torah.
But didn't you say that these halachas, which depend on the earth of Eretz Israel, depend on whether or not there's a majority of Jews living in Eretz Israel? So if it depends only on that, there could be no disagreement as to whether or not the majority of Jews live in Eretz Israel. Therefore, the opinion would have to be the same both on the part of the Sadma Rebbe and Rabbi Soloveitchik.
That is correct. The Gemara, however, I didn't tell the whole story. The Gemara in the second parak in Ksubis only says that the din requires the majority of the world Jewish population should live in Eretz Israel in order that the mitzvah of challah, hafroshes challah, when you bake bread, in order that mitzvah should apply min ha-Torah. The Gemara never says it with respect to Shemitah. The Rambam thinks that it applies also to Shemitah. So it's a question whether we should follow that Rambam or not.
And the second question is, you just said yourself that they wrote down the Torah Shabbat Pei because they were afraid, at least that's an opinion, they were afraid that foreign influences would creep. Well, clearly foreign influences can creep in, and people's personal points of view can creep in. So it's not necessarily a conscious determination to preach according to one's political views.
Okay, so that's a big problem. That's what this Rabbi Moshe Glezner claims. That's why he writes in his introduction to his Sefer Doravi. That's why the Chachamim, one of the reasons why the Chachamim insisted on writing down the Torah Shebaal Peh, to tie the hands of the later Rabbanim, that they shouldn't be able to say whatever they please. They can't reconstruct the whole Torah Shebaal Peh and introduce that much. There's much less that we can introduce now than in the earlier generations because of that concern.
Well, doesn't the interrelationship between politics and religion go back to the Second Temple period? It seems like there's always been this major relationship between politics and religion.
Well, it's a Dukim and the Purushim. I don't think that that was... Yeah, they had different views about Torah, right. The Tzdukim didn't accept the Torah Shebaal Peh. That's not politics. They didn't have Amun in the Torah Shebaal Peh. They only accepted the Torah Shebichsav. And the Chachamim had a tradition. They called the Chachamim the Prushim. The Prushim means those who seceded, the separatists. They called the Rabbanim the separatists. The rabbis didn't separate. The Tzdukim are the ones who separated. For years, it was always a tradition that there was a Torah Shebaal Peh. And then the Tzdukim decided to reject the Torah Shebaal Peh, so they referred to the Rabbanim who carried on the ancient tradition as the separatists, like today. The Reform referred to the Orthodox as the separatists. The Orthodox were always around. The Reform, they just came on the scene 150 years ago. So the Reform referred to the Orthodox as the separatists, the same as in the days of the Baal Shem. But that wasn't a question of politics. That was a question of tradition of Torah Shebaal Peh, that they rejected the Tzdukim, rejected the Torah Shebaal Peh.
the writing down of the self-determination about this, isn't there a problem that human beings are human beings, even the greatest chachamim, and unconsciously, subconsciously, their leanings, their desire, their ideas are going to come out in the decisions, I mean, quite independent of outside influences.
So we assume basically not so. We assume that it's not so. The Pasuk has Parshas Mishpatim in Chumash. Shmos follows Parshas Yisro. The very end of Parshas Yisro, the last Parsha, is about building a Mizbeach. And the first Parsha Mishpatim is about establishing a Bezin. So Rashi quotes from the Tanoim, from the comment of the Mechilta on that Pasuk, from the Smichas HaParshas, from the fact that the Mizbeach is, Parshas Mizbeach is written right next to the Parshas HaSanhedrin. We can establish the principle that the offices of the Sanhedrin have to be in the Beis HaMikdash, Samach LeMizbeach. What is the idea of having a Sanhedrin, Samach LeMizbeach? That is the case. A Sanhedrin always met in the Beis HaMikdash. What is the idea behind that? The idea is that the Beis HaMikdash is not only the Makam HaKrovas HaKarbonis, it's also the Makam HaTfila, as it says, Ki Beisi Beis Tfila Yikari L'chol Ha'amim. And Shlomo HaMelech, when he built the first Beis HaMikdash, offered a special tefillah. Thank you very much. Offered a special tefillah and mentioned in his tefillah that everyone, the Jews and the non-Jews alike, should come to the Beis HaMikdash to pray. Beis HaMikdash is not only a place for sacrifice, it's a place for prayer as well. Beis HaMikdash, according to the Kuzari, is also the Iker place where Hashuras HaShchina is, the place of Nevuah. All of the Nevi'im had to do with the Beis HaMikdash. And also, the Kuzari points out this idea that the Beis HaMikdash is the Iker Makom of the Torah. Both the Iker of the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebal Peh. The Beis HaMikdash is the place where Moshe Rabbeinu had written a special Sefer Torah, and he gave it to the Levim, and he said they should preserve it there in order to preserve the Masorah, in order to preserve the correct text. And the way the Medrash Rabbah adds on, commenting on that pasuk at the end of Chumash Dvarim, the Moshe Rabbeinu said, in case there will be a doubt as to what the correct reading should be in the Chumash, this Sefer Azorah that he's giving them should be the final source where they look to determine what the correct reading is. And the Sanhedrin Gdolah, which is supposed to be the final authority on the Torah Shebal Peh, is supposed to convene in the Beis HaMikdash. So that's what this Sefer HaKuzari points out. Beis HaMikdash is the Makam HaKrovas HaKarbonis, it's the Makam HaTfilah, it's the Makam HaNevuah, it's the Makam HaTorah. Why should it be the Makam HaTorah? What's the idea behind that? So the Ramban, in his commentary on that pasuk in Shmos, by Eila Mishpatim Shetosim Lefneim, that the Chumash requires Sanhedrin Samach LeMizbech. The Ramban explains that in order to paskin properly, if the Sanhedrin will be Samach LeMizbeach, we assume there will be a Hashuas HaShchina, and there will be a Siyaita Dishmaya. This is already Lemaila Menateva. We assume that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give a divine assistance to the Rabbanim to paskin properly. And the Gemara mentions this and has halachas based on this assumption that Elokim Nitzah Badas Kel, that whenever there's a Bezin, not only the Bezin HaGodol and the Lishkas HaGosis, whenever there's any Din Torah, unless you have fakers, unless you have criminal rabbis who just want to paskin the way they want, to have their agenda. But if they're honest to goodness Rabbanim, and they're trying to ascertain what the real psak is, and then the Gemara says, the Shechinah will be present to help them paskin. We have a din based on that assumption that the Rabbanim who paskin a din Torah have to sit ba'atifa. They have to cover their heads, either to wear a talis over their heads, or today usually they don't wear a talis when they have a din Torah, so they're supposed to wear a hat when they have a din Torah. Maybe the reason why many Rabbanim don't wear a hat when they have it in Torah is because they know the Shechina is not going to help them because they're fakers. Maybe that's, but that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch.
Well, how did you see the preference of the Bavli over the Yerushalmi? I mean, ultimately the people living in Bavli had much more influence than the people.
Okay, that's a very good question. We'll have to discuss that. Why do we usually follow the Bavli over the Yerushalmi if the Yerushalmi was closer to, was in Eretz Yisrael? It's a very good question. Okay. So this idea, Lekim Nitzah Ba'adas Kael, is not only assumed to be so with respect to a Bezin paskening, Bezin HaGadol paskening, Bezin HaGadol is Samach LeMizbeach, so we assume that there's going to be a Hashuas HaShchina, or any other Bezin that paskens in Mamanus and Nefashis, we assume that this is even true in paskening a Shaila, where there is no Bezin. We assume, as the Gemara quotes the Pasuk, Sod Hashem L'Yireyav, a Pasuk in Tehillim. Sod Hashem L'Yireyav means HaKadosh Baruch Hu will assist the Talmid HaChamim in paskening the shailas. And that's the reason why a psak is binding. When a person asks his rabbi a shayla, so the Torah says you have to follow the psak. Why? Because we assume that the rabbi didn't make a mistake. Not that the psak is binding even if he made a mistake. No, the psak is binding because we assume that he was given a divine assistance not to make a mistake. And in fact, the Gemara in the end of Sanhedrin quotes the pasuk regarding David HaMelech, describing David HaMelech's activities. Vahi David l'chol d'rach of maskil v'Hashem imoy. So the Gemara says that that expression, v'Hashem imoy, God was always with him, implies sha'alocha kemoyse b'chol makoim. Whenever he used to have a dispute and halacha with others, so he was always right. The halacha would always remain like David HaMelech. Why? Because v'Hashem imoy, because the Shechina always helped out David HaMelech in paskening the shailas. And it's not only in the days of David HaMelech, and later generations as well. The Ravid, in his commentary on the Rambam, the Ravid usually disagrees with the Rambam, and every so often he gives a comment, he's not disagreeing. So the Ravid in his Hasokas, in his commentary on the Rambam, writes in two places a very striking expression. He writes, Kfar Hafia Ruach HaKodesh Beveis Midrashenu Zeh Kama Shonim. The Ruach HaKodesh appeared in our Beis Midrash, and we pass him like this. And many assume that he didn't mean anything special, a real Ruach HaKodesh. He just meant that he always felt a divine assistance in paskening shailas, and he thinks that the din is not so. He always felt that he had a divine assistance in paskening. And they tell such a story regarding the Nadi Behuda as well, that the Nadi Behuda was appointed the Rav in Prague. First he was in a smaller community, Yampala, and then when he was appointed Rav in Prague, so there was usually in Europe it was a big issue when they appointed a Rav, there was always a big machlokes. These people wanted their relative to be appointed, those people wanted their relative, whatever. So at the time that he was appointed, there was still a tzad chicken egged for quite a few years. He wasn't so world famous until years later. So soon after he was appointed Rav of the city, so Shaila and Hilchus Treifos was presented to him. And he started mishing in Shulchan Aruch, he started looking it up in Shulchan Aruch, mishing. And then he slammed the Shulchan Aruch closed, and he started screaming at the people that they're fakers, that they made up the Shaila, that it's not a real Shaila. And he started to hold them by the neck, and he started to choke them. So the fellow admitted that it was true, that he made up the Shaila. And he just wanted to embarrass, he knew also Yerideya, the fellow who posed the Shaila, may believe that he had a Shaila in Hilchus Treifos, also knew Yerideya, and he knew that this Shaila is not described in Yerideya. So he wanted to stump the rabbi. He's going to ask him something that he knows is not described in Shulchan Aruch. So the Nadi Yehuda said that he knew right away what the din was. Not described in Shulchan Aruch, so it's kosher. If you have some injury to the animal, some sickness or some broken bones or something that's described as a treif, then it's a treif. If it's not discussed, that means that it's kosher. If it's not treif, then it's kosher. So he was going to say kosher, but he didn't even have to look it up in Shulchan Aruch. He knew by heart that it's not described. He knew it was kosher, but he felt very insecure. And he said that whenever he paskens shailas, he always had a very secure feeling that he had a divine assistance in paskening. This time he felt very uncomfortable. So he said he wants to look it up in Shulchan Aruch. He started to mish the pages, mish. He didn't think he was going to find anything. He was just trying to think on his own. Why do I have such an uncomfortable feeling here? So then after he was mishing, he realized that this is from the Tzad Shekeneged. He realized that these people were his... the Hebrew who didn't want to have him appointed as the rabbi. So when he slammed shut the Shulchan Aruch, he started to scream at them that they must have made up the Shaila, the whole thing was make-believe. And then they admitted that Ataka was true. So this is a phenomenon that not only existed in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, that the Shechina would assist the Talmid HaChamim in paskening. We assume that it's true. In all the generations, and later generations also, we assume that if the honest to goodness Talmid HaChamim, that they will paskin without any negiyas. There is a din in the Chumash that a negeya is possible to paskin in the din Torah and Didimominis. If the din is a negeya bedover, he's not allowed to paskin, because the Chumash says ki hashochad yaver eni chachamim. Whenever there's a negeya of mammon, so we are concerned that the person will paskin wrong in an area of Didimominis. But when it comes to Yisav HaHeter, we are not concerned about a negi of mammon. Let's say a Talmid Chacham has his own butcher shop and he paskins his own shailas. So a Talmid Chacham has a slaughterhouse and he paskins his own shailas. And because he's mekel, he saves millions of dollars on treifas and on nevelas and so on. So there is no din over there that a negi is possible. The aloha negi is possible ladun is only in a din terin din mammon. So other areas we assume that the person will be above negiyas if he's an honest to goodness Talmid Chacham. And the one who makes such a statement, that's what the Chazon Ish points out. The Chazon Ish has a beautiful little sefer that's called Amuno Bitochon. in a very fancy style Hebrew. He always writes very poetic. He had an original style Hebrew. Different style Hebrew, so he has a lot of different ideas there. So one certain section in that book, I'm going to be talking a little safer, is about this. So he writes that some people think that the concept of Amunas Chachamim was invented by the Aguda in Europe when it came time for the elections. The Aguda was a real political party, and they had a representative in the Polish government. And in fact, I think there were 2 years that they made a coalition government and the Aguda was controlling Poland. Rabbi Tendler always jokes, he said, that's why the Polish government collapsed. Because the Aguda was running the government. Anyway, but there, I think two years before the Second World War, in between the First and Second World War, that the Aguda was in the coalition government that was controlling. They got all the minorities to join together and they were running the country. So when the Aguda was encouraging all the Balabatim that they should vote for the Aguda to support their candidate, so they said everybody has to have Amunas Chachamim. They coined such a phrase, Amunas Chacham. So some people thought that this concept of Amunas Chacham was invented on that occasion. So the Chazon Ish writes, that's ridiculous. Amunas Chachamim is the basis of the whole Torah, and he goes into this whole discussion. If we believe, one of the Yud Gimel Ikori Hamunah is that we believe that the Torah is Min HaShamayim, what does that mean, Torah is Min HaShamayim? It means that at one time in the history of the world, there was a Torah Min HaShamayim. Yeah, you can believe that at one time God gave a Torah Min HaShamayim, but you can also think that there was a breakdown in the tradition. There were maskilim who were of the opinion that the Amoraim never understood the Tanoim, and the Rishonim had the wrong gears in the Talmud, and the Achronim misunderstood the Rishonim, and the Halacha is binding anyway because that's the Halacha. The Halacha is binding even though it's an error. Or others say, no, everybody misunderstood everybody else, and therefore none of the Halachas are binding. So this is not what we assume. We assume, as the Rambam uses the expression, it's in the Siddur, practically verbatim from the Rambam. We assume not just that there was at one time a Torah Min HaShamayim. We believe HaTorah HaMetzuya Ato Biodeinu, Hi HaNesuno LeMoshe Rabbeinu. We believe that the Torah as we observe it today, the mitzvahs as we observe them today, are Min HaShamayim. How could that be? How can you believe that the Torah as we observe it today is Min HaShamayim? Maybe there were errors that crept into the tradition. We know here and there are errors. Every so often there's a printing error, every so often there is someone who misunderstood something else. And maybe everything is a misunderstanding. So the answer is no. Unless we know otherwise, we're supposed to have a munas chachamim. We are supposed to assume that these were, that honest to goodness tamen chacham, if they're not honest, they're not. But if honest to goodness tamen chacham worked on an issue, we have to assume that they were given divine assistance to paskin properly. And they did not introduce their own agendas into paskining the shilas. And
what do you think about the requirement of people in the Sanhedrin, in order to be a member of the Sanhedrin, you have to be rich, you have to be married?
In order to be a member of the Sanhedrin?
There are certain basic requirements that could be influenced in the wrong way.
You have to be rich in order to be a member of the Sanhedrin?
You have to be rich, you have to be married.
Not familiar? I don't know. I'm not familiar, could be.
In light of what you've just said, how do you explain the fact that, I'm not sure it was Rabbi Yehoshua that time with the Bas Kols at Rabbi Yehoshua, mm-hmm. So how could you explain the fact that the Tanoim were wrong because the Bas Kols said that Rabbi Yehoshua is right?
Right.
And then what about his obligation to practice the way he felt it was right, especially in view of the fact that the Bas Kol came down and said so?
The Bas Kol came out and said that Rabbi Lezer was right, and nonetheless, we don't paskin like Rabbi Lezer, we paskin like Rabbi Yeshua. So how can that be? So the Talmud gives the answer, that Eilu v'Eilu d'Rili Kim Chaim. The Bas Kol said that from the heavenly perspective, Rabbi Lezer's opinion makes more sense. But the Rabbanu Shalom gave us the Torah, we should paskin based on a human perspective, not based on a heavenly perspective.
But Rabbi Eliezer's perspective was also from a human perspective, and it was
right.
His obligation, therefore, to practice as he felt the din.
Right. So Rabbi Lezer was doing the right thing. He and his students followed their opinion. Rabbi Shua's group was the majority group. So it was their obligation to follow their opinion, and their students, after each group of students, have to follow their Rebbe. Now, if you have people who don't specifically align with Rabbi Lezer or with Rabbi Shua, they have to follow the majority. If I'm a Talmud of Rabbi Lezer. If I'm a Talmud of Rabbi Lezer, so I'm obligated to follow Rabbi Lezer's Shita, even though he's in the minority. If I'm not a Talmud of Rabbi Lezer or Rabbi Shua, I'm just a plain balabas. I don't know who's who over here. So then you have to follow the majority rule.
What about when he was put in Harim?
Right.
Then did his followers still follow him?
The Gemara says, no, they're not supposed to. If they was put in Chayram, not. But the Gemara says that even if you have, let's say, a minority opinion, the Talmidim of that Rav are permitted and obligated to follow his opinions. And even years later, even the Gemara says, even many years later, the Balabatim in that community, who never ever knew that rabbi, they never saw that rabbi, they were born 100 years after the rabbi passed away, that rabbi has the status of Mar Dasra, because they follow all of his psokim, and they are permitted and obligated to follow his opinions, Bein Lahokal, Bein Lahachmer, of the minority opinion. The Gemara says that in the community of Rabbi Yosef Aglili, they used to eat chicken that was cooked with milk, even years after Rabbi Yosef Aglili passed away. That was his opinion. So those Talmidim, or those Balabatim who lived in his community, considered themselves, this is Talmidim, so they were permitted and obligated to follow his shittas. That's the main halacha, that every person has to follow his Rebbe if he has a particular Rebbe. If he doesn't have a particular Rebbe, then you follow the majority opinion. Now the question is, if we should, that's what you basically raised this question before, if we assume that every honest to goodness Talmud Chacham has a divine assistance, Sod Hashem Lirev, to Paskin properly, so how can it be that Rabbi Leza had a divine assistance to say one way, Rabbi Shua had a divine assistance to say the other way? So the Min HaShemayim, they're talking out of two sides of the mouth. So the answer is, that's what the rabbi said, that Eilu V'Eilu Diri L'Kim Chaim. We discussed this last week and 2 weeks ago, that the Sefer HaChinuch and a small group of Rishonim assume that Eilu V'Eilu Diri L'Kim Chaim only applies in rare instances, namely, where the more correct opinion is really the Beis Shammai, because they were more, they were sharper than the Beis Hillel, they were brighter. So we assume, the Gemara says, Beis Shammai wa mechada de tfei. So the Sefer HaChinuch writes, the Beis Shammai were really right in all the cases, but because the Beis Hillel were in the majority, so the Baruch Shalom said we should follow the majority rule, even if it's not really that correct, even if the more correct opinion should really be the minority. So the Sefer HaChinuch claims, he understands that the only time this statement of the Talmud was formulated, that Eilu V'Eilu Diri L'Kim Chaim, is only in such a case where the minority opinion is really the more correct opinion. But as we said last week and 2 weeks ago, that's not the generally accepted opinion. Halacha L'maaseh in Shulchan Aruch, we don't accept that opinion. We assume that Eilu V'Eilu Diri L'Kim Chaim applies in all instances, not only when the minority opinion was issued by the sharper view. We said that Dinah Min Avelus and Arla B'Chutzlarts and Adin Torah, many other cases, in Erevin, many cases where we consider the fact that there is a dispute, and we don't say, we don't pass like that opinion, means that it's wrong. We don't assume that it's wrong. We say that it's Diri L'Kim Chaim, that it has validity, and there's a suffix called the Hu, it's a slight suffix what the din is, but we pass in like the majority. This whole concept of Eilu Diri L'Kim Chaim, Eilu V'Eilu Diri L'Kim Chaim, is a corollary of this principle, the fact that we assume that Tzad Hashem Lirev, that an honest to goodness Talmud Chacham will have a Siyaita Dishmayo, will have a divine assistance in paskening a Shaila, and the fact that we have Rabbanim saying opposite from each other, that must be based, how can it be that each one had a divine assistance? The answer is yes. It's interesting, in this Sefer Doravi, this introduction to the Sefer Anchulin, he has Drush and Halacha blended into the introduction, so he quotes a famous Medrash commenting on the Pasuk, Hashem is seen, I bo bezorach miseir lomo, hafir mihar paron, ve'osa miribi v'iskoyrish, the Pasuk in Parshas Hazinu. So the Chazal have a comment, the famous comment on the Pasuk, what was God doing, Hashem is seen, I bezorach miseir lomo, hafir mihar paron, what was God doing in Seir, what was he doing in Paron, these are non-Jewish nations. So the Talmud has a famous medrash that originally God wanted to peddle off the Torah to all the nations of the world. So he offered it to the Arabs and he asked them, maybe you'd like to take the Torah. And they said, what does it say there? So it says, Loisinov. He said, no, it's not for us. Then he offered it to another nation and he said, would you like to accept the Torah? So he said, what does it say? It says, Loisigzol. No, it's not for us. We'll never be able to live up to that. Then he offered it to another nation. It says, Loitzirtzach. He said, no, it's not for us. So he said, okay. No one wants to accept it, so Belez Breri has to give it to the Jewish people. Very strange. So we recite the Bricha Satera Edei, Ashabach HaBanim Kolam, and Asalana Vestarosa. God chose us. What did he choose us? No one else wanted to buy this stuff, this merchandise, this leftover merchandise. So he gave it to us. It's a very strange Agada. And then furthermore, we don't understand murder, Ritziche, and Gezel, and Loisinov, often the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. That has nothing to do with the Torah. Even if you don't accept the Torah, you're still bound by the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. So what do you mean? The nations of the world rejected the Torah because of these laws. It's the whole Agarata is very not to be understood. So this In this long essay, the author suggests that what the Medrash is driving at is the following. The Rabbanu Shalom was afraid. The Rabbanu Shalom wanted to offer them the Torah. So their scholars told the Rabbanu Shalom it's not a good idea. Because we are so involved in Ritzicha, we will dreim it and grab a finger. We will, the Chachamim in every generation have the right to use the Torah Shebal Peh to develop new dinim. So they turned down the offer of the Torah. They said it's not a good idea to give us the Torah. Because we are so influenced by our society, we will dray so much till we will undo the whole din of Lo Sirtzach. We will dray till we'll undo the din of Lo Sinof. We will dray till we'll undo the din of Lo Sigzel. So that's what it means. It doesn't mean we don't want to accept the Torah, and therefore Lo Sinof and Lo Sigzel and Lo Sirtzach doesn't apply to us. It does apply to them, but they were saying they have this so ingrained in their minds that they will not be able to separate themselves from this attitude. And they will be introducing foreign attitudes into the Torah Shebal Peh, which the Rabbanu Shalom doesn't want. And in Torah V, he quotes this expression. There is a commentary on Pirkei Avos that's known as the Medrash Shmuel. It was written by one of the Sfardish Rabbanim who lived in Eretz Yisrael, I think, in the 1500s, middle of the 1500s. And he quotes usually Sfardish and Mefarshim, and the Medrash Shmuel. He has a very striking expression on the opening Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Moshe kibul Torah misinai umesara. Lo Yehoshua. What does that phrase mean? Umesara Lo Yehoshua. So the Medrash Shmuel, he uses an expression. He gave the Torah over to Yehoshua to do as he sees fit, and the Chachamim in every generation have a right to paskin whatever they don't please. Practically, writes us whatever they want to say. So in this Sefer Doravi, he tones that down. He says, no, it's not exactly so. They can paskin whatever they please. There's a certain attitude that has to be transmitted by tradition as well. And all of the new psukim of the Torah Shebal Peh have to be not only oisgehalten, not only correct based on the rules and regulations of the Midrash HaTorah and the Drash HaSbem, has to be correct based on the traditions of attitudes that are supposed to be transmitted from one generation to the next. There is a very interesting essay that the Netziv has in this introduction to his commentary on the Shiltas. This one is also in the first introduction. We mentioned the first introduction was originally published in the beginning of the first volume. And the second introduction was in the beginning of the second volume. And the third in the third volume. Now they print them all in the beginning of the first volume. So he comments on the Gemara. This is in the first introduction, chapter Ches. So the Mishnah in Yuma says that when the Kohen Gadol brought the special Karbanos on Yom Kippur, he had to enter into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and part of the ceremony, part of the service was that he would be Zorik the Dam in front of the Aron. During the whole period of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Aron was not there, so the Kohen Gadol would sprinkle the Dam in front of the location where the Aron used to be. And the Mishnah says there was an Evan Shasiyah, there was a rock there, and he would know that's the location where the Aron used to be, and he would be Zorik the Dam in front of that spot. Where was the Aron? And where did it disappear to? So the Gemara there on that Mishnah in Yuma has a whole historical discussion. So the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, base, chapter Lamed Hei, pasuk Gimel. Yoshiyahu HaMelech was going as the Aron with the Luchos. He decided it's time to take the Aron out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and put it in the special underground vault. The Rambam writes in the beginning of Hilchas Beis HaBchira, the Rambam quotes a Medrash, which we don't have in the Talmud at all. The Rambam quotes an outside source from an outside Medrash. That when Shlomo HaMelech built the first temple, he built a special vault, underground vault, to house the luchos when the time will come that they will want to remove the luchos from the Kodesh HaKadoshim from upstairs, so they'll put it in a special vault below the ground. Why did Yoshiyahu HaMelech decide that the time had come? Why did he decide it's time to take? Was he afraid that the enemy was going to attack Yerushalayim and that the enemy, the Goyim, would take the Orim with the Luchas and destroy it or steal it and take it into captivity? What exactly prompted him to be going as the Orim with the Luchas? So the Gemara never explains it. The Psukim and Divrei Hayomim have something to say, but it's very obscure, it's very unclear exactly what motivated Yoshiyahu HaMelech to be going as the Orim with the Luchas. So the Netziv has his whole introduction is on the development of the Torah Shebal Peh. So he starts off at the very beginning. He starts off with the pasuk, also from Hazino, Mimino Eish Dos Lomo. He speaks about the difference between Eish and Dos, and he elaborates on this theme that we emphasized the last few weeks, that the Torah Shebaal Peh, we don't assume that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu every single din. Over the generations, more dinim were developed, and in the later generations, if you have many theorems, so then you can combine all these theorems and come up with more theorems. And then in the next generation, you have already more, and you can combine these theorems and come up with more theorems. So he says that's called an esh. That if someone is smoking a cigarette over here, it can cause the whole city to burn down if he's not careful. So that's why the Torah Shebaal Peh is described as an esh. He says, the esh das. The das are the laws that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu etched in stone, das. And the esh is the power of the Torah Shebaal Peh to catch flame and to cause other things to catch flame till you have a whole tremendous madur. That's his whole development of the Torah Shebaal Peh. Till he gets to chapter 8, in this first introduction, chapter 8 here. So he says, what prompted Yoshua Melech to be going as the Luchas is the following, he thinks. Based on the way he reads the Psukim Midirayam, very obscure pasuk, very difficult pasuk to read. Yoshua Melech knew that the Sanhedrin, the whole time that they were paskening dinim during the period of the Bais Rishon, was influenced by the fact that they were Sanhedrin Samuch Lemizbech. They had a divine assistance. And they didn't have to work so hard. Like if you read Shalas HaTshuvas from the last few centuries, the Rabbanim worked very hard. They quote one Gemara and they quote another Gemara and they work hard. It's a contradiction, and how do you resolve the contradiction? And Rashi says this, and Taisu says that, and the Rambam says this, and the Shulchan Aruch, they pass like that, but not so sure, it doesn't mean this, doesn't mean that. They worked very hard. In their early years, in the days of the Bais Rishon, they didn't have to work so hard. They would just sit back, sort of, and pontificate, and think, what do they think the din should be? And they had this divine assistance. And it was kemat, like a b'china, almost like Moshe Rabbeinu. M'shchina medaberes mitok ranu. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have to work hard at all. The Shechina was speaking through his mouth. So the Bais Rishon, it was sort of something like that. Yoshua Melech knew that the Jews were going into Golus, ultimately. They knew there was going to be a destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. They would be going into Golus. And in Golus, they would have to develop a different derech in learning. They have to develop the Torah Shebaal Peh by using the Midrash HaTorah and the Drashas Pem. It's not going to be so easy anymore. So he wanted the Rabbanim to practice already now, Bizman Abayis, towards that eventuality, that eventually they're going to have to work hard on their own to develop Torah Shebaal Peh. So he was going as the Lucha, so they would have less Siyaita Rishmaya and Paskering the Shailas, and would have to work harder, like we have now, the Pulpula Shel Torah. And in fact, he quotes, in this section, he quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin, on Daf Chav Dalet, where the Gemara is commenting on a Pasuk in Navi, where the Pasuk speaks about the Navi taking two branches of wood. One is a Makel Chovlim, and one is a Makel Noam. Very obscure Psukim. I think it's in Zechariah, if I'm not mistaken. Zechariah is the most difficult Navi. Rashi writes, Zechariah is the most obscure. We don't know what he's talking about. So the Talmud explains some of the prophecies of Zechariah. The others, whatever the Talmud or the Medrash doesn't explain, we have no idea what's going on there. So the Talmud explains this prophecy. The Makel Chovlim and the Makel Noam represent the two styles of learning. In Eretz Yisrael, the learning was a Makel Noam. The Talmid HaChachamim Sheber Eretz Yisrael were Man'imim Zela Zela Halacha. They were very pleasant, Milosh and Noam. They were very pleasant to each other. And they would have a friendly discussion. They would come up with a maskana. Because in Eretz Yisrael, even after the destruction of the temple, there was still a Hashuras Hashchina in all of Eretz Yisrael. So the halacha, the psak halacha came about in a much more peaceful fashion. In the Talmid HaChachamim Shel Bavel are referred to by the Makel Chovlim, because Shemechablim, Zela Zeba Halacha. They used to fight with each other all the time, the Amoraim in Bavel. They're always arguing with each other. This one says this, and they're cursing each other out with such expressions, till they finally come to a maskana. So he says this was necessary because they had to have a different derech halimud, because they weren't close to the Shechina anymore. They weren't close to the Beis HaMikdash anymore. There was no Sanhedrin, Samuch Lemizbech. So his impression is that that's what, the Netziv's impression is that that's what prompted Yoshio HaMelech to be going as the Luchois, so that even during the period of the Bais Rishon, the last several years, they should already begin practicing this new Derech HaLimud, which would be necessary for them during the years of the Churban.
You're just talking about the Luchos, not about the Torah.
Well, the Luchos with the Sefer Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu's special Sefer Torah was together with the Luchos, either in the same Oren or on the shelf outside of that Oren. So that whole Oron, the Oron HaBris, with the Luchas in it, and with the Sefer Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, was placed in the basement of the Beis HaMikdash, not to be above the ground anymore.
And there were no other Sefer Torahs?
No, they were all over the country, but that special Sefer Torah, that's supposed to be the Sefer Torah to check the correct girsa. The Medrash, right, the Medrash says that on one occasion there were three in the Azara. There was still Sifri Azara, right. You can have hundreds. You can have hundreds of Sifri Azara. Whenever you have a Sefer Torah that's copied from the Sefer Azara, that has the same status as the Sefer Azara. So the Medrash says on one occasion they had a doubt as to whether the word should be spelled Ma'ono. That three questions, three words in Chumash were unclear to them. So they checked the three Sefer Torah that they happened to have in the Azara at that time, and two out of three had one reading, so they determined that that's the correct, that was the correct reading. But still, the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu had written was put in the basement, together with the Oren HaBris, and had these other Sifri Azara. Whenever you have a Melech, whenever you have a Melech Yisrael, he has a mitzvah to have a Sefer Torah written for him. So the Tosefta says that that Sefer Torah has to be copied from the Sefer Azara. If you copy it, whenever you write a Sefer Torah, you have to copy it from another existing Sefer Torah. Except for the first Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, he had no choice. That wasn't copied from anything. But every Sefer Torah after that is supposed to be copied from an already existing one. So when one copies a Sefer Torah from the Sefer Azara, it also acquires the status of Sefer Azara, and it can be used to determine what the correct reading should be. So if, at that occasion, there were hundreds of thousands of Sefer Torah all over the world, but they only used the three Sefer Torah that were in the Azara, the Sefer Azara that were copied from a Sefer Azara, and which are located, positioned in the Azara, have the special status of determining what the correct girsa in the Sefer Torah should be. So again, this there always is assumed to be a special relationship between the Beis HaMikdash and learning Torah because of the Sanhedrin Samach LeMizbeach, with Ashuras HaShchina assisting the Talmid HaChamim in Paskining. And this is both true on the level of Torah Shebichsav and HaTorah Shebaal Peh. The Torah Shebichsav, the main Masor of the Torah Shebichsav, is supposed to be determined by the Sefer Azara, which was located in the Azara. And all the traditions of the Torah Shebaal Peh are supposed to be transmitted via the Sanhedrin. The Rambam writes in the beginning of Hilchas Mamrim, the Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim and the Lishkas Hagaz is supposed to be the depository and the transmitters of the Torah Shebaal Peh. So this is all supposed to take place in the Beis HaMikdash so that there will be this special Siyata Shema, the special divine assistance. It's interesting, the tefillah that we recite every day in the Shemona Esrei appears in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Yiratzim lefanecha sheibonem Beis HaMikdash b'meher yomenu v'sein chalkeinem b'sarasecha. What do you mean? What does the sein chalkeinem b'sarasecha have to do with the Beis HaMikdash? People are learning Torah today without a Beis HaMikdash also. So obviously this prayer appears in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos at the very conclusion of Pirkei Avos. Obviously, the learning with the Beis HaMikdash is on a different level from the learning without a Beis HaMikdash, because we assume that you need a Sanhedrin Samach LeMizbeach in order that there should be this special divine assistance in paskening the Shailas properly. We mentioned, I think 2 weeks ago, last week, we mentioned the Agada in the Gemara in Menachas and Avchav Tesam and Beis, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu when he's a Har Sinai, he should write a Sefer Torah, he should put tagim on some of the letters, the crowns on top of certain letters. And Moshe Rabbeinu asks, what are the crowns all about? So the Baruch Hu tells him, it's too soon, you won't know. Many generations later, after the Torah Shebaal Peh will be developed and developed and developed, there's going to be a figure of Akiva, and he's going to give shurim, he's going to figure out what these tagim are all about. There are a lot of halachas that can be learned out from the tagim. So this agada is in the context of a long medrash. I didn't say at that time, I said this. The context is the following. The Gemara has another part of this agada appears in the first parak of Maseches Avodah Zarah, and part of it appears in the Bereishis Rabbah. And the pasuk, Zeh Sefer Toldos Sodom. So the simple translation of the pasuk sounds like the Bible is a book of the history of mankind. Zeh Sefer Toldos Sodom. The Bible is intended to be a book of the history of mankind. The Chazal have a comment, "Emuktam miyuchah b'Torah." That you have parshas out of order, chronologically out of order. So it's a pretty poor history book if everything is out of order. So the Chazal, but that's a simple translation. Zeh Sefer Toldos Sodom means that this chapter in Bereishis is the history of development of mankind. So the Chazal had a tradition in connection with that pasuk, Zeh Sefer Toldos Sodom, that there was a Sefer Shel Adam Arishon. What is a Sefer Shel Adam Arishon? It's a book that God showed to Adam Arishon. It wasn't written by Adam Arishon. Chazal asked, what book did Adam Arishon write? So they say, no, it wasn't a book that was authored by Adam Arishon. It was a book that was authored by God, which was shown to Adam Arishon, to show him, Dor Dor V'Dorsho, Dor Dor V'Chachamov, Dor Dor Manhigov. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Adam Arishon all of future generations who the leaders will be, who the leaders of the Jewish people will be, who the Rabbanim will be, and so on. What is that driving at? What's the significance of showing this to the nation? So the Chazal understood this to mean, this whole Agarata means that there is Yad Hashem in the history of the world. There is Yad Hashem certainly in the history of the Jewish people, and there certainly is Yad Hashem in determining what the Psak Halach is. We assume that Tzayid Hashem Li'reyev, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives divine assistance to the honest Talmid HaChamim to Paskin properly. Sometimes you have charlatans, but the honest Talmid HaChamim have a divine assistance. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees to it that the Psak that will be accepted will be the Psak that is the correct Psak. Now sometimes we can say, Eil V'yel Adivin L'kim Chaim, not always. You don't always apply that principle. Someone is right and the other one is absolutely wrong. You don't apply Eil V'yel in all cases. But whenever... Even in the case when it's Eilu V'Eilu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will see to it from behind the scenes that the psak that he wants to carry through will be the one that will be accepted by the Jewish people. The Gemara tells such a story in the end of Bab Mitzvah, around Daf Pei Vav. The Gemara says that there were two scholars who both studied by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi at the same time, Rav and Shmuel. They're both students of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. The first generation of Amoraim. Rav's real name was Abba. But he got smicha from Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi when they were about to leave to Bavel, each one to a different community to establish big yeshivas. So Rav requested smicha, so Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi gave him the smicha. And Shmuel wanted to request smicha, and as it turned out, he didn't have a chance, and the train left, and he went to Bavel, and he never got a chance to get smicha. The Gemara said, this came up, and another thing came up. There was an Aguda convention, a Mizrahi convention, a rabbinical convention, and Rabbi wasn't around, and the train left, and Shmuel never got smicha. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says you shouldn't be heartbroken over the fact that it was an accident of history. The Shmuel never got smicha? No, because someone had a look, one of the rabbis at that time had a look at this Sifra Shalotim Arishin. It was still available in the days of the Talmud. And they saw in this book that that's the way it was already designed, that's the way it was predetermined from the days of Sheshes Mei Breshes, that Shmuel, there'll be a great scholar in years to come whose name will be Shmuel, Chacham Yiskiri and Rebbe Lo Yiskiri. He'll be a great scholar, but he won't have any smicha. So this is also preordained in the book of Sifra Shalotim Arishin. So the Maharsha has a comment on that Gemara. Vasat Tesim Gishat. What did he lose because of the fact that he didn't have smicha? Rav had a big yeshiva and Shmuel had a big yeshiva. Each one had tremendous, tremendous number of students that had an impact for many generations to come. We still paskin today, like Rav, like Shmuel. Everyone had tremendous hashpah. So why does it say in the Sifra Shalotim Arishin? Why was that preordained and predetermined that Shmuel shouldn't get smicha? What's the significance of making such a statement? So the Maharsha says, no, we know, the Gemara tells us that generally speaking, whenever there's a dispute between Rav and Shmuel, so we paskin like Rav in the area of Issa v'Heter, and we paskin Shmuel in the area of Dini Mamonis. How come we don't paskin like Shmuel in the area of Issa v'Heter? So he attributes the Maharsha in the Chiddushi Agoda on Bava Metzia, Daf Pei Vav, attributes this to the fact that Shmuel didn't have the smicha. He says, that was probably God's plan behind the scenes. He saw that Shmuel was an expert in Dini Mamonis, but he wasn't that good, he wasn't as strong as Rav in the area of Issa v'Heter. So he saw to it that the opinions of Shmuel should not be accepted. It was taken many times, it was Eilu V'Eilu Diri L'Kim Chai, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt that it was more correct. Rav's opinion in Issa v'Heter was more correct. So that's why he saw to it that Rav got the smicha, and Shmuel shall not get the smicha, so that in the future generations they shouldn't paskin like Shmuel in the area of Issa v'Heter. That's his suggestion. So just to sum up, in every generation there certainly was much rabbinic input. They had the right to disagree with opinions of the scholars in the earlier generation, even though they were clearly not greater b'chochma v'minyan. Not at all greater. They admitted that they're less observant, less religious, less everything. But Moshe Feinstein said he's not saying that he's greater than the Nadi Behuda and the Chassam Sofer, but he still says he thinks he's entitled to an opinion, and once he felt he was entitled to an opinion, then he's permitted and obligated to say the honest, to express his honest opinion, even if it happens to be in disagreement with the Nadi Behuda and the Chassam Sofer. A person in a later generation has to express his opinion if he's entitled to an opinion, if he's scholarly enough and he has tradition of the attitudes and so on. He has to express his opinions even in disagreement with people who are greater than the earlier generation. So the problem is, if so, there's so much rabbinic input. It's taka umesor li Yoshua lasas by kifi asheyirtz, kachol asheyirtz, like the Medrash Shmuel says. So that can turn out to be a disaster. The rabbis in any generation to come up with any wacky idea and use this rabbinic input to change the whole Torah. So that's what the Dor Revi points out. That's why the Umas Olam, the Chachmi Umas Olam, recommended that the Torah should not be given to them, because they knew that they would distort. And by the Klal Yisrael, we assume that Soid Hashem Lireyav, we assume that there's a supernatural divine assistance to the honest Tamid HaChachamim to paskin properly. And whenever there's a dispute, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will see to it based on the Sifra Shalot HaMarishon. That means HaKadosh Baruch Hu will see to it behind the scenes that the opinion that should prevail will be the one that will prevail. Just because you have some Talmid Chacham who has access to the media, and he's always tumbling in the newspapers, and he's always traveling all over the world insisting that his Shita is the one that should be accepted, that Shita will only be accepted if the Rabbanu Shalom wants it to be accepted. If he doesn't want it, then it won't be accepted. There's no way that a person can force his opinion to be accepted on the Klal Yisrael against the wishes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, maybe we'll continue next time.